Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Saving Noah by Casey Rose, narrated by Helena Walters and Oliver Highpoint. Chapter 1. Lexi. I hate hospitals. That's what I'm thinking right now as I stand in a waiting room at a military facility in Germany. I'm pacing, and my sister-in-law, Becky, is sitting down, back, ramrod straight, staring blankly at the wall. We were at a family dinner with my parents when Becky got the call. My brother is a Marine, and while he's been deployed, Becky comes over each week for family dinner. My parents insist on dinner every Sunday, no matter what. Becky says it's been a great distraction during deployments. Well, thank God we were there when she got the call. She was told my brother had been hurt, but he was alive. They said it's serious and were taking him to a military hospital in Germany. When she was so stunned that she wasn't able to speak, I had to take over the phone call and get all the details. The moment we hung up the phone, the house erupted in a flurry of activity. There was no way we were letting her go alone. Since my dad just had back surgery a few weeks ago, he couldn't go, and my mom needed to stay to take care of him. So that left me. Just like that, we were packing our bags. More like I was packing both our bags, because Becky wasn't able to focus. Becky may be my brother's wife, but she has been my best friend since grade school. So, even if it wasn't my brother who was hurt, I'd still be right by her side. My parents made me promise I'd call them the moment we landed, and again after we talked to the doctors. My mom wants photos and video proof he's okay. That was Sunday. We took several connecting flights out of Savannah, Georgia, to get on our flight to Germany. Neither of us slept. I don't think anyone on the plane could tell anything was wrong. If they did, they didn't say anything. We defaulted to our old selves, connected to the plane's Wi-Fi, turned on beauty tutorials on YouTube, and spent half the flight saying things like, "Why did they think that was a good idea?" and "What did she do to her hair?" But when they announced we were landing in Germany, we both became somber, feeling again like a bucket of cold water was poured over us. We landed, made it through customs, got to our hotel, and then checked in. That was what would have been Monday night back home. I think it's early morning Tuesday here, though, but honestly, I'm not completely sure. After dumping our stuff in our room, we headed right to the hospital. I'm not kidding. Less than 60 seconds in the room. That brings us to here. Now we're waiting to be escorted in to see Johnny. From what we have been told, his unit was on patrol and was hit by an IED. We don't know any details other than he was alive when he was transferred here. So now we wait. A nurse comes about 15 minutes later and leads us back through several sets of doors. And finally, to a large half-circle room. The nurse's station is in the center, and there are about 12 beds arranged in a horseshoe around the nurse's station, so the nurses can see every patient from their desk. From what the nurse says, this is the ICU room, but family is allowed here. She leads us to Johnny's bed, and although he looks pretty beat up, he's fairly alert. He's in good spirits, but that's always been Johnny, happy-go-lucky. When he sees Becky, his face lights up. With tears in her eyes, she hugs him carefully. Then the nurse starts talking to us like Johnny isn't even right in front of us. "He has some burns and bruises, and we had to amputate part of his leg just below the knee, but he will be a good candidate for a prosthetic. There were some internal injuries, too. He will need significant recovery time and physical therapy, too. We're watching him now for infection, and as soon as he's in the clear, he can go back stateside. If you need anything or have any questions, check with us at the desk. The doctor will be by later. I thank her and hang back, letting them have their moment. But I overhear the nurse talking about the guy in the bed next to Johnny. Apparently, he's been severely burned on the right side of his body, has a high risk of infection, and they don't know if he will make it. He's been in and out of consciousness. When they say his name, my heart sinks. Noah Carr. I've seen Noah and his fiancée Whitney around different events and deployment homecomings. I'm not a fan of his fiancée, but Noah has always seemed like a great guy, not that I ever talked to him in person. Then it all seems to hit me, and my eyes water. I refuse to think of that day, the day I got a very different visit. I say a prayer for the man in the next bed and hope he knows how lucky he is to be alive. Instead, I try to focus on Johnny, and when his eyes meet mine, it's like he knows what I'm thinking. Holding his arms out to me, he wraps me in a hug. "I'm not going anywhere, Lex. I promise you that," he whispers in my ear. We sit with Johnny, and he asks us to talk about back home or anything, really. Becky tells him about family dinners, what is going on at work, and our dad's back surgery. It's all stuff I've heard over the last few weeks, and after a while, I zone out a bit and take a look around me. When a woman enters the room following a nurse, she captures my attention. She's all dolled up in a dress and heels, her makeup perfectly done, and not a hair out of place. Her shoes and bag all match her outfit in stark comparison to other family members, who, like Becky and I, look like we just got off the plane and came straight here. When she moves her hair from her face, I recognize her. It's Whitney, Noah's fiance. Though Noah appears to be awake, he's not talking. Looking at her, I don't hear what she's saying at first, but it's apparent that she's angry. I try not to eavesdrop, but as her voice gets louder, it's hard not to. Then I hear what she's saying, and my heart sinks. But then I'm furious. "How the hell am I supposed to explain you to people? Burns all over your face, and you'll ruin our wedding photos. How could I possibly marry you now? We could never have kids because they'd be terrified of you and they'd think you're a monster. We'd never be able to go out in public. What were you thinking going anywhere near that fire?" When Noah turns his head away and locks eyes with me for the first time, we really see each other, and my heart stops. His eyes are sapphire blue, and I feel the air around us start to sizzle. I've never felt this jolt from someone just looking at me. When my heart starts up again, it's racing in overtime. I look over at Johnny, who is their unit leader, and I can see he's pissed. I've only ever seen Johnny this angry once before in my life, and it ended very, very badly. "We are done. There's no way I can marry you now," she says in a final blow and turns to walk out of the room. Before I can even think, I'm right behind her, and she doesn't make it out of the door when I'm in her face. One of the nurses is on the phone and watching us like a hawk and hopefully calling security. "You're a real piece of shit," I tell her. She looks like she's been slapped. But before she can speak, I go on. "If you didn't love him, why even come here? Why make the effort? He's fighting for his life, and that's how you talk to him? You're the monster, not him. You know what? This is the best thing that could have happened to him, as it will weed people like you out of his life." "You know nothing," she snarls and tries to move around me. I block her path and give a sarcastic laugh. "I know you're lucky enough for him to live and make it home. Not everyone does, I say, walking away, as security meets her in the hall to escort her out. One of the nurses gives me a smile as I walk back into the room, but I keep going to Noah's bed. I'm on his good side, well, not the burned side, and standing here, I can see him, Johnny, and Becky. Noah still isn't talking, and his eyes are barely open. When I lean in, I can tell his eyes are trying to focus on me. I don't know if you will even remember this, but you dodged a bullet with her. I know it hurts right now, but it's better to know her true nature than to be trapped in a marriage with someone as selfish and shallow. There's someone out there who will love you for you, I say. He grunts, but still doesn't say anything. Listen, we aren't all shallow and materialistic. Look at Becky. She fell in love with my brother, and it wasn't for his good looks. I see Johnny flip me the bird, but Becky laughs. She's right, Becky says. The right woman, not a girl like your ex there, but a real woman, falls in love with the person. Looks fade, but the man inside doesn't. I smile at him. The right girl won't care about the scars, and she'll only care about you. Being this close to him for the first time is intoxicating. It's like he's pulling me in. Though he still hasn't said anything, his eyes are fixed on me. So I figure this is the perfect time to tell him my favorite quote on scars. From every wound, there's a scar. And every scar tells a story that says you survived. A scar simply means you were stronger than whatever tried to hurt you. Besides, scars are just tattoos with better stories, as they are God-given tattoos. When I reach for his hand, I'm not expecting the sparks that shoot up my arm. I did not anticipate the electricity flowing between us. I figure it's got to be the adrenaline from telling his ex off, right? You will fight, and you will be okay. You don't have a choice, I say sternly. Then, speaking for the first time, he looks at me again, and his words are slow. It's obvious that it takes a lot out of him just to talk.
What's the point? I don't have anyone to fight with me, like Moore does. He has you two. No one came for me.
He's referring to Johnny, my brother, whose last name is Moore. Though he's Johnny to me, it's still hard hearing the guys he's stationed with calling him Moore. I came for you, I reply to Noah. Johnny gives me a nod, telling me it's okay, and that I made the right choice. Besides, I continue, you will save me from being the third wheel over there. Just then, a nurse comes around and gives him some more pain medicine. Since I know it will knock him out fast, I bend close to his ear. I'm not going anywhere. Fight for me and choose to live. I will be here when you wake up, I say. He doesn't respond but is back asleep from the medicine, so I walk back over to my brother's bed. That's Noah, and I remember you talking about him, but what's his story? I ask.
Noah Carr. His parents are in Colorado, but they don't have the money to come out here, take time off, or even get passports. He sends money home to them every paycheck to help them and his two younger sisters out. Once he's stateside, I don't think they'll even be able to make it to visit,
Johnny says. I nod and turn to Becky.
We should take up a collection from the unit back home and see if we can raise the money to help get them out to visit once he's stateside.
Becky nods.
I'll get working on it with the other wives.
I walk back over and sit next to Noah and take my first good look at him. Though I see very little of it,
I can tell he has thick, curly, brown hair. Most of his head and face are bandaged, but I remember his piercing blue eyes. Looking down at the bed, I see his right arm is bandaged, and I'm assuming his leg is as well. Before long, how tired I am catches up with me. It's now sometime Tuesday, and I haven't slept since we got the call about Johnny. I fold my arms on the side of Noah's bed and rest my head on them. I just need to close my eyes for a few minutes.
Chapter 2. Noah. I wake up, and my first thought is her, the beautiful blonde with gray eyes. I remember Moore talking about his sister and how they were close. I vaguely remember seeing her at our last homecoming, but we didn't spend a lot of time together. Why was she being so nice to me? Was it pity? After deliberating for a minute, I don't think so. I saw the look in her eyes, and I didn't see any pity there. When she grabbed my hand, I vividly remember the sparks. They were undeniable and unmistakable. Then, when I first saw her, like really saw her, she took my breath away. With her sitting there next to me while Whitney was going off, all I could see was her. Trying to shift and get a bit more comfortable, I'm hit with the unrelenting pain that has been constant since I opened my eyes in the helicopter and then passed back out again. Immediately, the memories of the accident begin going through my mind. We never saw the IED, but it hit us hard. Moore's leg was under the debris, and I remember moving him and the searing pain on my right side and yelling for the guys. I remember pulling him with me before a few of the other guys who were behind us came running over. As soon as they grabbed Moore, I guess I passed out. After that brief moment in the helicopter, I don't remember anything but waking up here in this bed. Then, a little later, I remember being so happy to see Whitney walking in. Even if my heart sank a little that she didn't look worried like Moore's family did when they got here. Whitney was all dolled up. Was that yesterday or earlier today? Time seems to have no meaning. There don't seem to be any windows in the room, so I can't even tell if it's night or day. I think back to Whitney's visit, and to have someone come for me, I was excited. I thought I'd be here alone. My parents couldn't afford to come or miss work. I know my mom must be freaking out right now. Then, the words Whitney said crashed back into me. I just couldn't believe it. Why did she even come? All that could have been said over the phone. My physical appearance was a deal-breaker for her. I'm still the same person. I might have a few scars, but on the inside, I'm the same. But I never thought she was that type of girl to be so superficial. Though I guess I should have known. Whitney is a big social media personality and is always posting photos. Every chance she got, she'd get me to pose. It made her happy, so I did it, even if I wasn't a fan of having my photo taken all the time. She was the first serious girlfriend I've had. I met her right after boot camp, and we had been dating for almost 2 years when I proposed. She had been hinting at it, and it felt like the right step. So I popped the question, and then I was shipping out a month later. We had been planning the wedding for when I got home from this deployment, always picking out details in every letter or phone call, though I honestly could care less about flowers and colors, but I played the good groom-to-be. My family didn't like her much, and my sister said she was mean to them. I remember asking them to just try harder. Looking back, I should have put my sisters first. If I get the chance, I'm going to tell them how damn sorry I am. When Whitney was around, my friends also started hanging out with me outside of work less and less, and eventually just stopped. It should have been a red flag, but I just didn't see it. I recalled looking over to Moore's bed where his wife and sister were, so I didn't have to look at Whitney as she talked. That's when I locked eyes with her, and the electricity in the room intensified. I can't describe it. It's not a feeling I had ever felt before. For a brief moment, I was pain-free for the first time since the blast. Seeing the fire in her eyes and how she looked at Whitney made my heart clench. Whitney's words hurt, but her breaking off the engagement didn't. I loved her, but I'm starting to realize I wasn't in love with her. I was in love with the idea of her, of starting a family of my own, of having someone waiting on me back home, and someone to call and write to outside of my parents. Whitney never made me feel the way I did when I looked at Moore's sister. When I think about her going after Whitney and hearing what she said to her, it took my breath away with how much passion was in her eyes. She put Whitney in her place and said everything I wish I could have. When she came back to me. Me. I didn't tell her I wasn't heartbroken over Whitney. I couldn't talk at first. Not that talking in general is easy right now. My throat feels like sandpaper, and the effort to talk hurts altogether. Then I remember what she said about the scars. I thought about that quote and realized right then that she was one of the people who didn't care about the scars. No one who believed those words would care. Makes me think she has some of her own she's hiding. But the words she whispered right before I fell asleep come back to me. I'm not going anywhere. Fight for me and choose to live. I'll be here when you wake up. And she is. Right here. Sleep on the edge of his bed. She kept her promise, and I knew right then I would fight. I would fight to see her every day for as long as she would visit me. I'd fight for a chance to get to know her and to spend time with her. I'd fight to keep hearing her voice, to see her smile and to hear her laugh. Even though I know the chances are slim she'd want to be with me once the bandages come off, I'll fight for what time I can have with her. Some time is better than none at all. When I'm alone, I will have these memories to reach for because I know most likely I'll be alone for the rest of my life. I heard the doctors. I have bad burns on the entire right side of my body, from my head to my foot. Burns that will leave scars, ugly scars that I won't be able to hide. Sure, I can wear long pants and long sleeves and even gloves to hide my hand. Maybe a turtleneck to hide my neck, but the ones on my face, I won't be able to hide. Who's going to want to look at that every day? I already know I don't want to. I look down at her asleep and can't believe she stayed. She's resting her head on her arms and her long blonde hair is splayed out on the bed. The way the light catches her hair, it looks almost golden. I still can't believe she stayed. I try to remember seeing her at our last homecoming. She had to be there, right? How do I not remember her? I know I was focused on Whitney, but someone who made me feel this way just by looking at them, I'd surely remember, right? Whitney never made me feel this way. Not once, not by looking at her or when she touched me. It was just comfortable. Now, I don't think I can settle for comfortable again. I wonder how long these sparks will last. Maybe it's just because this is all new, or maybe it's the pain medication they have me on. I think again of the sparks from when she grabbed my hand, and suddenly, I have to know if they are still there. Very slowly, since everything still hurts, I move my hand to her head and gently run my hand through her hair. My hand tingles, so yes, the sparks are still there, which gets my heart racing. This gets the nurse's attention since the monitor near my bed starts going off. They assume it's from the pain and come over to give me another dose of pain medication. It's then I realize I don't know her name. I never paid much attention when Moore talked about her, and most of the time he would just refer to her as his sister. Who was this beautiful girl who stormed into my life? And what are the chances I can get her to stay?
Chapter 3. Lexi. I wake up to hands running through my hair. Without opening my eyes, I know it's Noah just by the sparks I feel. I could sit here and let him play with my hair forever. It's so calming. I don't want to move. And I don't want him to stop because I want the sparks and whatever this is. But even more than that, I need to know he's okay. I open my eyes and sit up slowly. You're awake, I say, smiling at him.
You never told me your name,
he says in a rough voice that's dry and scratchy from not being used. His words are slow and deliberate, like it's hard for him to talk. Reaching over, I get his water cup and bring the straw to his mouth. He takes a sip before I set the cup back down. I'm Lexi, I say and squeeze his hand, needing the connection.
Noah,
he says, his voice that sexy, gritty baritone, even after the water. Maybe that's just his voice. God, I hope so. I smile at him, and I'm not able to see if he smiles or not because of the bandages. Yet even so, his eyes seem to smile back at me. My heart clenches, and a cage of butterflies are released in my stomach. You'd think I never had a guy's attention on me before. I'm glad you decided to fight, I say truthfully and rub my thumb over the back of his hand.
Well, when a beautiful woman asks me to fight for her, how could I not?
He says. I feel my cheeks warm and I sigh. Such a flirt, I say, turning away from Noah for a minute to catch my breath. Johnny is giving me a weird look, so I walk over and pull the curtain closed between their two beds. Mind your own business, I say to Johnny, and then watch his whole face break into a smile. Asshole. I glare at him before I sit back down, and Noah watches my every move.
Guess I'll get hell for that later, Noah says, with more of a smile in his voice than I have heard him with before.
I know he's referring to Johnny being his unit leader. I can handle him, so you let me know if he gives you any trouble. Also, remind him of prom, I say louder to make sure Johnny hears, when I hear Johnny yell, You wouldn't dare! I smirk and wink at Noah. Smiling, I yell back, Then mind your own business! I hear him grunt, but I know he will at least try. Noah tries to laugh, but then winces in pain as he tries to shift. Want me to get a nurse to get you some more pain meds?
Yes,
he says and takes a deep breath. I walk over to the nurse's station to let them know and then head back to Noah. He takes my hand.
Talk to me until they get here.
Just then, the doctor comes in to talk to him. I squeeze his hand. I'll leave and let you two talk.
No, stay,
he says, his eyes pleading. I nod and sit back down. The doctor looks surprised.
To be honest, I'm surprised you're even awake. Normally, the body will shut down to heal.
The doctor goes on.
But if you're talking, it's a good sign. We didn't have to put you in a medically induced coma, as you have mostly second-degree burns with some third-degree burns.
They won't heal pretty, and we think you will need some skin grafts, but we won't know for sure until the healing is further along. Though, we will monitor you for signs of infection in the burn.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?